So Dr. Ros Foster is our next speaker. She completed her postgraduate training in the UK, followed by a specialist training in genitourinary and HIV medicine. She's a fellow of the RACP, Chapter of Sexual Health Medicine, conjoint lecturer, Sexual Health Program, Kirby Institute, and works as a staff specialist at Sydney Sexual Health. Welcome, Ros. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, everyone. I'm presenting very similar data, actually, to that which Linda has just presented, but with slightly less fancy stats. But I'm presenting today on gonorrhea positivity in asymptomatic contexts. And I'm presenting on behalf of Sue Chan. She's a fourth-year medical student from the University of Sydney. She can't be here today because she's sitting her final exams. Good luck, Sue. So I'm presenting on her behalf and on behalf of the other authors listed here. We all work at Sydney Sexual Health Centre. So, previously, and for as long as I can remember, asymptomatic gonorrhea contacts, so people presenting to sexual health clinics without symptoms but as contacts of gonorrhea, would be treated with empiric antibiotics at the point of testing. From December 2018 at Sydney Sexual Health Centre, we decided that instead of doing that, we were going to offer people coming in who are asymptomatic tests, but waiting to treat them until we had the results through. And we set up some fast-track treatment clinics to help facilitate this. The rationale for empiric treatment of asymptomatic gonorrhea contacts is sound, particularly in the past where tests were perhaps less sensitive and took longer in terms of the turnaround. Treating at the point of initial contact does potentially reduce loss to follow-up and also the need for repeat visits. And also there's the public health benefit, so the potential reduction in risk of onward transmission to others or the potential for complications in the individual. Our rationale for wanting to change our local clinic guidelines was basically driven by antimicrobial stewardship, so increasing rates of resistance to antibiotics to treat gonorrhea. Also helped facilitated by the fact we have very sensitive tests now with quite rapid turnaround times. And the fact that local, smallish studies in Sydney and Melbourne have shown that the majority of gonorrhea contacts, so in the ballpark of sort of 70 to 80% of asymptomatic contacts, do test negative for gonorrhea. So our primary aim for this study was to determine the proportion of asymptomatic contacts who are positive for gonorrhea, and also to determine any correlation between patient characteristics and likelihood of gonorrhea positivity. So we performed a retrospective study of asymptomatic gonorrhea contacts. So just to explain how we did that, we would look at our electronic database and then go to what were then paper notes, find people who presented predominantly as or primarily as contacts of gonorrhea, and then exclude anyone who also had symptoms. We looked at all people who presented between the 1st of January up until the 30th of June 2018. We collected data on variables of interest, including gender, use of PrEP, gender of sex partners, sex worker status, country of birth, preferred language, and number of partners. And we performed bivariate and multivariate analyses, so chi-squared tests and logistic regression, to identify variables associated with gonorrhea positivity. So there were 295 episodes of care from 286 distinct patients, and it was a 28% positivity rate for gonorrhea in those 295 episodes of care. As you might expect, the majority of those positive swabs, because these were asymptomatic contacts, were in the anorectal swabs or throat swabs. So there were 54 throat swabs that were tested positive for gonorrhea in total, 36 anorectal and 16 urogenital, 8 of which were in women and 8 in men. There were some dual infections, so 20 presentations were with a positive anorectal and positive throat swab, and 3 had a positive throat and positive urogenital swab. So of our 286 individual patients who attended during this time, then according to our records, 261 were cisgender males, 22 were cisgender females, and 3 were transgender females. If you have a look at the positivity rates, then 26% of the male contacts tested positive for gonorrhea compared to 52% of female contacts. So that was in total 12 cisgender females and one transgender female tested positive for gonorrhea. And that was statistically significant and very similar to the data that Linda's just presented. We looked then at males only on this slide. So this is looking at gender of sex partner for males within the last 12 months. And this is where we had full data on gender of sex partner. So here we have 29% of men who have sex with men tested positive for gonorrhea at any site, and 8% of men who reported sex with women only. So again, a statistically significant difference, and again, similar to the data that Linda just presented. If we look just now at the men who have sex with other men, those who were on PrEP, 13% of them tested positive for gonorrhea, compared to 31% of those not on PrEP. Again, a statistically significant difference. And I think for me, the most surprising thing about this slide is how few people were on PrEP. And we haven't looked into that further, so I don't know whether this is overall a group of lower risk men who wouldn't be eligible or requiring PrEP, or whether some of them may have started PrEP after this initial presentation, or perhaps whether people who take PrEP present less frequently as contacts because they know that they have either just had a recent STI screen as part of their PrEP follow-up or are due testing in the near future as part of their PrEP follow-up, and I don't know the answer to that. When we have looked at PrEP use in our cohort of patients who come to our clinic, then we do pretty well in terms of offering PrEP to people who are eligible. So that is quite a low number on PrEP, perhaps. Anyway, these are more results of bivariate analyses. None of these were statistically significant, but I did want to just highlight sex work. It's very similar, again, to Linda's data. So we didn't have high numbers of people reporting sex work in the last 12 months. There were 8 in total. 5 of these were cisgender women, 1 was a transgender woman, and 2 cisgender men. And 50%, so 4 out of 8, small numbers, but still a high percentage tested positive for gonorrhea. And that was 3 cisgender women. Their positive swabs were all from the throat, and 1 transgender woman whose swab was positive from the anorectal sample. That's that. Country of birth and preferred language were not associated with gonorrhea positivity on this analysis, and neither was number of partners, so more than 5 in the last 3 months. We did do a multivariate analysis as well, and the same variables remained positive. So if you were female, you were nearly 9 times more likely to test positive for gonorrhea. You were more likely if you were a man who had sex with other men, and if you were not on PrEP, to test positive for gonorrhea. So we also had a look at co-infections. So of the 295 episodes of care, then 43, that's 15% of people tested positive for chlamydia, 4 positive tests from the throat, 16 from the urogenital, and 24 anorectal. Just looking in a bit more detail at those anorectal positive results, of the 24 who tested positive for chlamydia in the anorectum, these are people without symptoms, 13 tested positive for gonorrhea and 11 tested negative for gonorrhea. So if you just think about that, if we had treated those 24 people empirically, presumptively for gonorrhea with azithromycin and ceftriaxone, we would have arguably undertreated their anorectal chlamydia by giving them azithromycin rather than 7 days of doxy, and we'd have also treated 11 people for gonorrhea unnecessarily. So our conclusions from this are that we felt the majority of contacts were, well, the majority of contacts are negative for gonorrhea, so it was 72% of asymptomatic contacts were negative for gonorrhea. The majority would therefore receive unnecessary and or incorrect antibiotics if treated empirically. And we feel that our findings support the change that we've brought in our local guidelines to test and then treat according to results. There are some points for discussion, though. There are more than this probably, but these are the three I've put up. So how do we minimise loss to follow-up after testing? Is there a role for point-of-care testing for gonorrhea in the urban setting? And could we develop some sort of clinical score or some means to help guide individualised treatment decisions? So might some individuals, so for example, females or maybe sex workers, and we do need more data for anything like this, but might those particular groups benefit perhaps more from empiric antibiotic treatment? I would love to hear your thoughts, and thank you very much.